Good morning, good afternoon. As we continue along with our series about frustration and how to handle it, let's just go back over what we've learned so far a little bit. We're working on the universal laws of nature. We're trying to be happy people. We're trying to live in the world with a bit of joy, enjoy our work, not get too surprised by stuff that happens, learn how to deal with it when it does. And one of the things that really gets people by the neck is frustration. And frustration, as we've said, it's like back in the old days when they used to have to invade a fort and they had those slingshot things that they used to put a big rock in it and fling it through the air and hope that it banged the wall of the castle and knocked a hole in it, and then all the soldiers would run through and there'd be a war. So anyway, frustration is that plus the the big bridge where people came in and out of the castle. Well, if you get through that, it was Christmas. And frustration is a mechanism getting inside your identity, inside your ego. Now, your ego is built, as we've said before, to defend yourself. It's ego. It's therefore fear, to avoid fear, to evade uncertainty. So the inside your ego is what you know. It's your known territory. It's the familiar. It's the comfortable. It's the predictable. And so inside that predictable, it doesn't necessarily have to be all that good for people to want to defend it. In other words, I've met people who are depressed, people who, in fact, I've had people pay for coaching who are in incredible trauma, who refuse to change it. They hope like hell that everything outside of the fortress of their ego, their identity, their is going to change so that inside remains comfortable. Unfortunately, it's not the way nature works. It's not necessarily a very good philosophy to live by, but guess what? The vast majority of all fairly addicted religious people and those who live by the concept of mass consciousness default to the thinking process, which says what I know inside this fortress makes me safe. Now, what we know is judgment, what we know is criticism, what we know is self-abuse, what we know is predictability of what happened yesterday, what we know is inside a packet of cornflakes, what we know is what sort of car we like, what we know is the colors, what we know is likes on Facebook. And so inside of this wall, we feed stuff we know that we feel comfortable with, and we call it us. And inside us, it doesn't have to be, as I said before, all that good to hang on to it. We can be self-critical, we can be mean and nasty, we can have a self-conversation with ourselves that is so damn bad and rude, we wouldn't even say it out loud if it was a friend or a family member or someone we cared about or someone we were trying to be attractive to. We can quite often put stuff inside of that fortress. And basically we do that because we'd rather be safe. We'd rather be comfortable than uncomfortable. Now, that's understandable, isn't it? Your body has a built-in hardwired mechanism to seek pleasure, avoid pain. That's hardwired. Pleasure, when it's defined as comfort, pleasure, when it's defined as predictability, pleasure, when it's defined as a home that you've come home to for the last, 5 years, pleasure, physiological pleasure, can become quite addictive. And pain can be described as anything outside of that. So if you're asked to change your circumstances, your job, your family life, whether you drink bottled water or not, whether you want to buy coffee from a coffee shop, whether you want to take this for dinner or become a vegetarian or stop drinking, it can present to you the definition of pleasure, which is drinking or being safe or living comfortably, and change, which can be defined for most people as pain. Pain of discipline, pain of discomfort, pain of the unknown, pain. And so the body straight away balks at change and says, no way, I want to seek pleasure. The mind, which wants to be right and never wrong, that is the fortress. So the mind and the body are a team. Now, if the body thinks it's a pain, the mind hasn't any choice because the body just won't go there. Now, if you get a very strong-minded person who attends a workshop, the body goes, oh yeah, I'm going to come with you on this journey of change. I'm going to change what I like. Good luck. Because the body doesn't do it. It just goes, no, I still like chocolate and I still like alcohol and I still like marshmallows. And so to talk the body into change, it's got to start to dislike the thing that keeps it stuck. In other words, if you like chocolate, you've got to work out how to dislike chocolate and it become a pain rather than a pleasure. And that's why, on diets, people spend a lot of time talking the theory of diets and the theory of food and the theory of alcohol, so it feeds you enough information so that you start to biologically dislike the thing. I've tried for a long time to dislike chocolate, and I struggled with that one for sure. But I enjoy my definition of pleasure is going for an ocean swim or going for a bike ride where it hurts, pushing myself. And so pain and pleasure, as you'll recognize from people who are covered in tattoos, and that's been very painful for them to get those tattoos, perceive it as a pleasure to get the tattoo and a pleasure to wear it. So what we define as pain and pleasure for each of us varies based on our perceptions. And our perceptions therefore start to become the boundary line between change and not change. If we perceive something to be a pain, we won't go there. If we see something to be a pleasure, we will go there. So talking our body into adapting or moving or morphing into a new state of, let's say you said tomorrow, I want to be a vegetarian. The best way to do it, rather than attract it to vegetables, is to start defining meat as painful. Maybe even overcook it a couple of times, recognize the body's discomfort from eating it and digesting it. Just recognize that you can turn the pleasure of eating meat into the pain of eating meat just by simply re-perceiving meat. You might go into a butcher's shop and just stand there looking at, or go into a slaughterhouse and watch an animal being killed from the beginning to end. And sometimes that gives you an associative pain, and you say, I don't want to cause pain anymore, and it's painful to me to eat meat because I associate it with pain. So perception becomes a really powerful weapon in the process of becoming a change agent, becoming a thought leader, becoming somebody who really is invested in adopting a new process and new ways all the time. So pain and pleasure and the perception of those two become a trick you can do on yourself in order to cause you to do something different. Alcohol is another one. Alcohol Anonymous and all the rest of the alcohol programs, what they do is bit by bit they hear enough stories of enough pain people are experiencing by the next trick we want to examine is the possibility of using the mind to cause change. So we talked about alcohol being that you can actually sit with a group of people and talk about how much pain it's caused people and flip the perception of whether it's a delicious thing, therefore it gives the body pleasure, or whether it's a bad thing and gives the body pain. And we can morph our perception across both physically, which is called rehab, or and detox, or we can flip the perception mentally, which is to re-perceive the involvement with alcohol in our life and see it as being pain-causing in both an emotional, spiritual, financial way. And there are apps that do that feed you. If you feed into it your food intake or your alcohol intake or your smoking intake, what it tells you is how much money you've spent, how many calories you consumed, how much disappointment you've, how much weight you put on. It'll define the ugly of and give it back to you in a form that gives you the changes your perception of something that might be disguising its ugliness in another way. So One of the tricks that people use to avoid change is by compartmentalizing things. They say, I'm dealing with my relationship and I have a problem with my relationship, but I don't have a problem with work, and I don't have a problem with my health, and I don't have a problem with my financial. I only have a problem in one area of life. And then they start trying to fix the relationship. Now, if you look at the whole of life, firstly, what you'll realize is pleasure and pain are always balanced. And so if there's pain at home in a relationship, there might be pleasure at work. But if you also go into home, you'll see pleasure and pain there too. And so the ability to zone in on, or when you compartmentalize things, to zone in on the pain or the pleasure of something is the difference between infatuation and resentment. When we meet somebody new, we infatuate. That means we only see the good things because we're only focusing on the good things. There are plenty of bad things when we first meet somebody, but we focus on the good things, and therefore it's pleasure, and that's called attraction, and we want to go there, which means there is no resistance to change because we're changing something, we're meeting somebody new, we're going into a new world with somebody new, and we're happily moving forward with somebody new. After a period of time, when we adapt to that and we get comfortable with somebody new, we start to witness and experience the negative, the pain. And the pain and the pleasure has always been balanced. It's just we're blinded, it's called infatuated, with that person and with that situation and with that relationship. And now we become resentful, which is the opposite. And the only thing we start to witness and experience is the pain of the relationship. Pleasure and pain are still balanced, but we're witnessing a different side of it. One of the problems with this sort of compartmentalization is that it self-validates. In other words, it goes inside of the safety bubble and starts to turn around inside the safety bubble without incentivizing the removal of the frustra. It doesn't expand a person. It doesn't grow a person. It doesn't evolve a person. What it does is sets a person on a path to fix something that's broken inside the fortress. And frustration starts to grow. As frustration starts to grow, the main gate of the fortress, that wooden, big wooden thing that dropped over the moat, starts to drop. And in come enemies, illnesses, diseases, headaches, negative perceptions, negative self-talk, and in start to march these enemies. And they form inside the fortress an alliance with the dark forces that are in there already. In other words, if you're inside a job and you don't like your job and you start getting frustrated with your job, this frustration comes in and starts making the things that you don't like about your job or someone in your job even more poisonous. And so it starts to sort of self-validate and it starts to grow. Now, the solution always to frustration is expansion. A contracted person with a fortress wall, comfortable in what they think, comfortable in what they call pleasure and pain, comfortable in what they call right and wrong, cannot grow. There is impossible, because the definition of growth is the rebalancing of previously unbalanced perceptions. So if we saw, let's say, as a leader, we saw somebody leaving the business that we'd invested in as being painful, we're now given an opportunity to expand ourselves by seeing it pleasureful, and therefore have a bigger view of it, have a bigger vision of it, have a bigger perception of it. And that's the secret of all frustration, is the ability not to compartmentalize, the ability not to see pleasure and pain, but to see balance in something, in perception, and therefore expand out of the frustration. So let's say another example, another great example, you're in a job you don't like and you go, I really got to move on from this job. And Walker Talk says Love it before you leave it. It's a universal law. Love it before you leave it. Otherwise, you're just going to run into the same problems wherever you go to. To love it before you leave it means that something has to change, doesn't it? If you're in a job you don't like, and you're in the job you don't like, and you can't change the job because that's what you don't like, the only thing you can change is your perception of it. To change your perception of the job, you have to expand your definition of what it is you do in that job. You have to expand your viewpoint of it. You'll have to see pleasure where you previously saw pain, and you might have to see some pain where you previously saw pleasure. The job will be to have a bigger view of your job, to see it in a bigger context, to see it in a learning way, to see it in a not just a day-to-day, but maybe in context to the overall learning and development you get by confronting some of the things you can't do and people you don't like. You know, every person on the earth has every single quality the same as every single person on earth. So it's ironic that we think we could run away from someone we don't like and not bump into them somewhere else. It's also ironic that we think we could run away from someone we don't like and actually not be running away from ourselves. So love it before you leave it is the Walker talk on that. Love it before you leave it guarantees you don't compartmentalize and set yourself up for failure. Love it before you leave it means you evolve and grow and expand through the frustra, and you build a new castle wall 100 meters further out than the old one and then have to pull that down again maybe the week later and build a new one. Eventually, you'll learn to make these things out of bamboo. This is Chris. You have a beautiful day. Bye for now.